You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Thank God for Nostra podcast. My name is John Hoddlebod. I am the developer of the Oracle.social Nostra client. And today I'm talking to Franzapp. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for welcoming me.
Could you go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what projects you're working on, kind of how you got into Nostr, all that kind of stuff?
I'm primarily working on Zap Store, the permissionless app store some of you may know about. And how I got into Nostr, that's kind of a long story, right? How I got into Bitcoin in the beginning, that kind of took me into Nostr, and what stuff before Bitcoin took me into Bitcoin. But I don't know how long or short you want to make it. But basically, I would say that I rediscovered Bitcoin a few years ago, and I was looking to do something in the space because I was a bit bored of my freelancing work. And I searched, and nothing really clicked. I was looking, maybe exploring stuff, getting into Lightning, but I was not really enthusiastic. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this Nostr thing showed up, even though I was not very active on Twitter. I was mostly lurking. I think it was a post by JB55 who announced Damas. So he started working on this iOS client for this new protocol that could be like social network. At the time, people were mostly thinking about it as just a replacement for Twitter. But then we do know that thing was Fia Jaff and Ben Arc were also exploring the marketplaces. Yep. So I thought that was quite interesting because it would complement Bitcoin really well. Now we have like an open protocol for communications. But obviously, as I also did with Bitcoin back then, which by the way, I discovered really early on, I think around 2011, I knew about it.
Oh, wow.
I was aware of the, yeah. So I knew what the value of position was, but at the same time, it was sort of a toy. That's how I saw it, right? So it also didn't really, like, I would say I didn't really understand money much. Didn't have really my finances in order or whatever. So it's just mostly like a fun thing, you know. Also the orange logo, like, didn't give me like some vibe that this could be something as important as I see it right now. So I dismissed it. I think we all have our journeys, right? But then I, in 2013 and 14, I was using Bitcoin regularly for making transfers, basically. Not for saving, but I was using it to move money from Europe to Argentina because, well, in terms of the financial services in my country, Argentina, things are complex, to put it in a simple word. But I was using Bitcoin in order not to use the banks, and it worked really well for me. So I was buying Bitcoin online, obviously, and then physically selling it like an hour later, maybe to avoid a bit of the volatility and get the local currency and for my monthly spending. So that was a moment where I really saw the utility, but still I didn't grasp it fully. And all that's long story to say that with Nostr, you know, I had a similar experience when I saw this like, I don't know if you remember the very first clients. Was it Brandly and
Astral.Ninja.
Astral.Ninja. They were really, I mean, the UX was not the selling point. So I was like, yeah, well, this thing, I'm not sure whether I should put some time into this, because one of my ideas when I heard JB55 was, well, since I'm doing app development, I'm going to build the Android client for this thing. But yeah, again, I as I said, I dismissed it for this time, not years, but merely months. I kept following this a bit, and until December 22, right, when Jack came in, and all of a sudden there was like much more buzz around it. And, you know, many people joined Nostr, and I'm not sure if we already had a client with better UX, but it just felt right. So I joined pretty much around that time. And then it clicked immediately.
Yeah, that kind of multiple touch point story is pretty common for people. I had a similar thing both with Bitcoin and with Nostr. So you were part of that big Jack Dorsey cohort, basically. Did you start developing on Nostr right away, or were you just a user for a while?
Well, as I said, I was looking for stuff to do, like get involved more in the space. This is quite important to me because not only I mentioned I was getting bored with my freelancing work, but it's perhaps something more fundamental. I want to do something more meaningful and try to find a way, right? How you do the dream job, but also making money. It's hard. I was trying to make these trade-offs, and yeah, I guess that's how, I guess I would say that what was driving me, and this actually drove me for a big part of my life, is a little bit this anti-authoritarian thing in me. And something that in parallel to Bitcoin was important to me. I had a health problem like maybe 12, 13 years ago. And I got super frustrated with the medical system, doctors. They wouldn't really listen to me. I had to take the matter in my own hands. And, you know, the internet basically saved me. The work I put in it. And so that was another point of kind of distrust in authority. So it's something that is, yeah, definitely important to me. I previously worked, I mean, this goes far back as like maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago. I was working for a multinational company. I used to live in Europe for a long time. And I also saw, like, first it was a big company working for a big client for government. And so I saw imagine client being the government and this huge corporation. Like, I was in a team where there were like constant meetings about nothing, and things got postponed and everything was inflated. You know, it was so much fluff around. And I remember being super frustrated with this. And that was yet another point where, you know, the authority, quote unquote, which I would say is not per se the word authority in sense of like, because there's a good definition for authority or a good, yeah. Let's say when you think of authority, of someone that you're influenced by or who you respect, but not because it's imposed. Mm-hmm. So I guess authority, you could take it as fiat and non-fiat. So then I understood, yeah, it's the imposed authority. It's like, you know, it's the government, it's this big corporation. So anyway, all that to give a background on what was really driving me of this, like, of the system that I didn't really like. So all these points converge, I think. And for me, when I had this health issues back then, the ones that I want to mention, I discovered like the issues with seed oils, which really, it's kind of a new term. I think the OGs, we call PUFAs, like polyunsaturated fat.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But part of the, as I was saying, the point that converges all these, you know, Nostra, Bitcoin, and, you know, the health stuff, and everything seemed to like crystallize in this, that Nostra is not only the protocol, the tech itself, but also the community. And you start finding people who also share these values, even though for me, they came from different places at different moments in my life. And now all of a sudden, I see that this is a place where I feel comfortable discussing all these various things.
Yeah, so it is amazing, isn't it? You know, like 9/11 is kind of the day that I noticed that the most, because the assumption, at least within my circles on Nostr, is that, you know, 9/11 was an inside job. And my whole life, I went with me being the weirdo who, me and my dad, you know, just say like Building 7, kind of weird. And everyone around us was either ambivalent or openly hostile to that kind of line of reasoning or inquiry. And then, yeah, all of a sudden I've found my people and they're all cypherpunks.
It's like too good to be true sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bizarre. Hopefully it's not the case that there's only 10,000 of us, but I don't know. It could be true. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that while that's amazing, that is also a limitation for Nostr, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really well-versed into the latest communities discussions, but I do feel that it's super important to have that, probably the most important thing for Nostr. Like, I don't know if like segregated communities. Yeah, probably. That don't necessarily, you know, see the content, but rather just use the tool itself.
Yeah, I think so. Communities seem like a great on-ramp onto Nostr, and a sort of a way to bootstrap those sort of open social clusters, you know, because we have the one Bitcoin social cluster. And in order for other ones to sort of exist, there needs to either be a heavy overlap with the Bitcoin social cluster such that those people are in that Venn diagram. But then, of course, those people are mostly going to be posting, are still going to be posting about Bitcoin. So every other peripheral thing becomes related to Bitcoin until you have people join those secondary clusters. But that's really kind of hard to bootstrap, because the people who aren't interested in Bitcoin aren't here, and so they're not interested in coming. But if you have communities that people can just bootstrap on their own and start with, you know, like 5 or 10 people and then build those up over time, or bring an existing audience over, then yeah, like they can be insulated from the Bitcoin content and then suddenly break out of that community when their relay publishes, you know, the stuff that they've been talking about onto the wider network. So I think there's a ton of promise there. It's tricky trying to figure out how exactly to go about it. And there's about as many different approaches as there are people working on the problem, which is a good thing at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, good.
I share this with you. I see it as we should develop these islands, and then hopefully these islands will connect bridges between them or just connect through the protocol. But we don't need to like start to make this one island bigger. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. There's an interesting guest I had on a long time ago, Alex Pacheco, and he works on this app called 150. It's a great episode to listen to. I really like his ideas, but he talks about this thing, local versus global consensus, and local consensus is pluralistic. Global consensus is sort of monolithic. And, you know, when you talk about the, what's it called? The window. I can't remember what the window is called. The window of what's acceptable to say, but that's kind of your global Overton consensus. Window? Overton window. There you go. That's the global consensus, and that's sort of what's acceptable to say at large. But that's the result of sort of the confluence of a whole bunch of the different local consensuses. And what social media gets wrong is the conflation of global and local consensus, where everyone is just thrown out into the ocean of global consensus, whereas they don't have a chance to kind of build consensus within a community first, using, you know, their own terms or throwing out more extreme ideas so that they can be discussed internally before they sort of leak into that global consensus. So I think that's a really helpful distinction. I don't know if there's a way to engineer something to make that happen, but I do think that's just kind of the way it naturally happens. So cultivating that would be an improvement to kind of the algorithmic driven consensus, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, go ahead. Ask me something.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to ask, so at what point did you start moving away from your contracting work and over into Nostr development? Was Zap.Store something that you were working on for a long time, or were there projects before that? Just kind of curious about your history of getting to the point where you're at now.
Right. Yeah, so I was never a big social media guy. I was a bit timid in the beginning, posting some stuff, seeing how this thing worked. I'm talking about like Nostr since early 23. And I saw people were building stuff. And I started playing around with a small client of Kind One Notes. Until, I don't know, I guess I thought about building some kind of blog engine in the beginning, based on Nostr, until I thought, well, there's a ton of these like static site engines, but maybe the comments are more of an interesting problem to solve. And then I found this project by Fiat Jaff, I think it was called No Comment, which is a widget to embed in your blog or in your website. To basically power comments on an article on Nostr. This was even before long form, I think, or maybe just the same time. But I thought it was a great idea. I thought I could do something like that, maybe with better UX, and just had took a shot at that. And I called it ZapThreads, even though. Just like Zap Store, there are products where you cannot zap so far, but that was the plan. So I built Zap Threads, yeah, again, with the idea of extending or bringing Nostr to places where people are hanging out, basically, instead of you having to discover Nostr and getting onto this client, downloading this client, or visiting this client, you would be browsing the internet and you would come across this thing and then you would be exposed to Nostr. So that was a bit my idea on how to develop the idea, how to grow that project. I'm super interested on thinking about how to bring more people, expose more people to the protocol. So I was busy with that for a few months, and actually I noticed that Abla.news, which is this long form client. I'm not really sure what the status is right now, but I noticed a discussion on their GitHub about a commenting system and that they should implement that. I was like, wait a second, I'm building this, so maybe I could just plug into Habla. So I got in touch with the guys there, John, Verbidicha, Jesus, and I joined their calls, bi-weekly calls, and that was great. They received me. They were super excited about my suggestion to integrate ZapThreads into Habla, and yeah, it was merged and it was working, so I was super excited, and it's a great way of being welcomed into Nostr, I felt, rather than just exchanging messages with people on the social clients. It was like now I feel more part of the movement.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember when the comment section showed up on Habla, and it seemed very sudden and abrupt. They didn't say that they were working on it, and then just one day the whole thing showed up, and like it's a fair amount of work to actually put that together. I didn't realize that it was powered by you, and like ZapThreads is something that I had completely missed. I had not seen that project at all, so it's cool to hear the history of that, and also like see that there are developers working together. There's a lot of collaboration on Nostr compared with other things. I always feel like there could be more, and there's also even more proliferation of different projects that are competing, which is also good. That's a great way to get started. Like merge your project into someone else's, actually worked. That's pretty exciting, actually.
And the fact of it being a widget was easier, because then I had a lot of projects I could pitch that to. By the way, now it's used in npub.pro.
Oh, really? Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
is that an example of a micro client then, where it's not really standalone? It's a library that gets embedded, but wholesale.
Totally. It is standalone in the sense that it was designed to be embedded in regular websites. Mm-hmm. But then I had actually, I was part of the first cohort of the Sorry Engineering in Madeira earlier this year. And even though I had ZapStore as an idea in my mind, I did have talks with people about ZapThreads and how to, if you're embedding in a client that is already Nostr client, like which ways could we use to reuse the relay connections, for example, and not having to, because if you're doing this on an iframe, then you're like basically duplicating the work. Because you want to display the amount of comments, but then you need to load them to do that, and then you have to load them again in the widget itself. So anyway, I think I can use this as a segue to ZapStore, because back in Madeira,
did you solve that problem? Did you figure out a solution to that?
Never. No, actually, I didn't. It just kind of, it was one of the last things I really thought about that I wanted to fix, but then I got carried away by this new idea. So I'm grateful that people still were sending pull requests to the ZapThreads project, and that Arthur is using it, and some other people. There's a bunch. Obviously, Habla, I suppose, is still there. So it's rewarding. It's great to see it. It was hard work, and it's great to see people appreciate it.
Did you do that kind of like on the side in addition to your regular work, or did you kind of drop everything and move into industrial development wholesale?
I phased out my work. That was by the time I was doing ZapThreads. Yes, I was still doing freelance work. But then I was thinking that I would stop anyway, find, I don't know, just part-time or something. But I needed more space for Nostra stuff. Mm-hmm. I think about a year ago, I applied to OpenSats. And fortunately, I did get a grant, which was perfect, really, because even though I already kind of had made that decision, then I could just keep doing it like with less financial worries. So I'm super grateful.
Yeah, it's great to have those grants. What are your thoughts on the grants? You know, there's been some questions about whether they motivate or incentivize the right kind of work to be done. You know, people are less likely to be working on business models or marketing and that kind of thing if they're on a grant, because of the gap between, you know, open source work and actually having a functioning business is so large. How do you see that kind of resolving, or is that something you've put thought into?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely skews incentives. I see the problems with it. While at the same time, I'm grateful. And I think a lot of people, I think it's a net positive, because it's difficult to monetize on Nostra these days. It's super early. So it's probably necessary, even though I agree that it might not push people, because sometimes you just need to, you need to have fire on your ass to, you know, to move certain directions.
Yeah.
Maybe there's other motives than, you know, than, I don't know. How about you? Because I know you have a clear goal, right?
Yeah. Well, and temperamentally too, I think I stick to larger projects a little bit more easily than some other people in the space. And so I've been able to establish Coracle pretty well. And I've only recently branched out into another large project. But yeah, I think with grants, there's... sometimes I wish that Jack hadn't shown up and that there wasn't any money, because the grants, the main effect that I think they had is sort of making the protocol harder to change. It became much more rigid after people were getting paid to create more and more software built on the protocol. Whereas before, we would just change things in the protocol and no one would really think about it, because the number of implementations out there was so small and the group of Nostra developers was so small that everyone was able to keep up and everyone was able to change things. Now we have things baked into the protocol like follow lists that have just, they have some problems and they're probably never going to be resolved because everyone has built on top of them at this point, and to change it would be a huge breaking change. So I would have liked to work on things for maybe another year or something before the money came through. But like, that's a stupid thing to complain about. You can't control what happens with life when people actually discover something. It's much better that Jack discovered the project and brought a bunch of money to it than no one ever discovering Nostra, because that's the default. Most of these protocol projects just kind of are built for a few years by one or two enthusiasts, maybe a small community if they're lucky, and then they're abandoned. And that was the thing that was most likely to happen to Nostra, but it didn't. And we're really lucky and blessed to be able to have as much momentum behind Nostra as we do, because even with all its flaws, it is something that's categorically new in the decentralized web technology space. So yeah, all that to say, I think I agree with you. The grants are a net benefit. And also, you know, for the first few years of Nostra, I think it's really important that we have a lot of freedom to experiment and try new things. And ultimately, yeah, we'll have to grow up and stand on our own two feet as businesses and developers, because the economic model of Bitcoin, of Nostra hasn't been tested yet either, right? Maybe there's no way to build a business on Nostra without recapturing users and showing advertisements or doing vertical integration of your supply chain so that, you know, every client also runs a server and with a bunch of add-ons and stuff like that. So, you know, I think there's a way to a real business model, but that's just like, that's a very hard problem that has not been tested at all. So definitely getting to the point where there are self-supporting businesses is something we should have our eye on. And I do think we are nearing an inflection point where there, that is more, more within, the scope of things that people are thinking about. You know, everyone gets started with this, with Nostr. Like, it's very common for people to be working on Nostr and just not be able to sleep because they're thinking about all the possibilities. And then once they've actually like explored some of those possibilities, discovered whether they're feasible, found the limitations of them or whatever, then they're able to start sort of getting their head down, being a little bit less enthusiastic. As bad as that sounds, I think it's healthy to not be just like super on fire for the new latest thing indefinitely. So settling down, building projects, working on sustainable things, even marketing, getting users and all that kind of thing. That's the kind of work that becomes more possible when you're not just excited about the brand new nature of the thing. And I don't know, maybe that sounds a little bit boring, but I do think that's just a mark of maturity to be able to settle down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we don't know how it would have gone, you know, but if yeah. Jack didn't appear. But I agree. I think, well, if you just draw a line between the bazaar approach or the cathedral approach, maybe what you were saying, if we had one more year before more people came, you know, then maybe we'll flesh out the protocol a bit better. And I don't know, a lot of the design choices that were made in the beginning with best intentions but are not great, then yeah, we would have sounder protocol. But at the same time, it's like, first, there's things we can't control. And then these bursts of adoption are also useful because, yeah, as you said, maybe this wouldn't have gone anywhere. So I guess, well, you said a lot of things, but I agree that it's, yeah, I got to keep going. And I agree on not, even though I have been super excited about different things, stuff I've been working on. I still am. But it's true that it's more about being sustainable and, you know, showing up and doing the work, even though you're not motivated that day. As long as your goals are clear, well, we all have just different personalities, but I believe that the projects that get the most focus in sustainably are the ones that will have the greatest chance to eventually find monetization, again, helped by these bursts of for whatever happens, you know, because Twitter did this or Reddit did that, then we got, you know, inflow of users. Well, then we just use that, but keep putting the work to. Yeah, I will say that even though I started with Zapdrits and then I moved on to Zapstore, I'm very focused. I have a very clear goal. And yeah, some days I'm not as enthusiastic, but I want to keep focused on one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, having that long-term goal is what makes all this worthwhile. You know, if, and grants, again, like, kind of can potentially muddy the water. Like, you may know that someone has done some good work, but you don't know what their motivations are. You say, here's a grant, and then they get bored halfway through and then just like leave and their project is abandoned. That doesn't really do anyone any good. And so, you know, but then of course the people who are interested in it long-term, they can't just quit their jobs and actually work on it. So I think the hype-driven development is a cost of supporting that more long-term structural vision. Yeah. And you know, everyone knows me as the communities guy. I'm just trying to get my church off of Facebook. That's like, that's basically it. But so what's your vision? What's the thing that motivates you and keeps you going?
Oh, I want to make I want to make developers be able to make a living with no intermediaries, especially open source devs. And it's mostly devs who do apps for the end user. That's because then there's the whole universe of library development, which is another thing. But if you can, I believe, like, if you want to think about money, if you want to be able to sustain, like, you need to connect to the consumer, like, or who's going to pay for that if you're thinking like B2C, right? So if there's a smoother way for devs to get paid, be it value for value or, you know, paywalls or whatever, right? Then this money can start flowing up, or, you know, and maybe we can find a way for library developers to receive part of that income. I don't know exactly how, but I want to make that friction. I want to make it frictionless for users to send value to the devs.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's certainly germane to the conversation about grants, because if we have an app store that allows us to have sustainable business models for the applications we've built, then you know, that's one step closer to being able to be sustainable. Of course, sustainability is a pretty tall order, especially when you have as few users as Nostr does. So user growth will be necessary too. But, like, you know, Zapstore doesn't even necessarily have to be for Nostr apps, right? You have other non-Nostr apps that are listed in the store, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For those who don't know, so Zapstore is a permissionless app store. For now, it's on Android. What's the first of all, is the most popular operating system in the world, just a minor thing. And then it was easier for me to do. It was a natural choice to start with, even though I also have a CLI client. So there are probably like 5 apps there. So nobody cares about that. The CLI meaning like package manager, like Homebrew or Apt or something like this. So, I mean, that's definitely not the focus. I built the CLI tool for developers to be able to publish their apps directly so they can show on the store. So there's 2 main categories of apps inside Zapstore. They are the ones signed by the devs. So this is an event, a specific event that developers are signing for release, and they're publishing it to the Zapstore relay. For now, we only have 1 relay, but eventually be able to manage. And then there's the other subset of apps, which is, you know, the ones outside of Nostr or the ones on Nostr that devs haven't signed yet. So those are most of the apps, because obviously the idea is to try to make it useful. So I cannot, if I just, okay, essentially this is a marketplace. And if you, marketplaces have the chicken and egg problem. So you need to kind of hack one of the supplier demand. So yeah. I basically hack demand supply by just grabbing APKs from around GitHub and putting them on there with my signature. So I'm basically curating stuff from GitHub, you know, for people to have a good experience when they download the app. You know, there are not a ton of apps. There are about like 200 so far. But yeah, in the beginning, I received a lot of requests to add stuff, but not that anymore. So it seems like maybe because I'm catering to, you know, the Nostr. Our ethos, our Bitcoin apps and so on. But eventually when this starts getting bigger, of course, you know, there's plenty of more apps there. So I don't want to stop. I plan to add many more apps. I plan to add more operating systems. Been working, still a draft, and maybe I shouldn't speak too soon, but something coming up for macOS.
Nice. Do you have any plans for iOS? Because that seems like the really hard nut to crack with their 30% fee and very closed ecosystem. Is that something that's possible? Like, are there F-droids and Obtaniums on iOS right now, or is that just like impossible?
That's the hardest OS, obviously.
Yeah,
because they have a monopoly on the App Store. Mm-hmm. Even though should be maybe feasible in Europe with the regulations there, it's still not ideal. There are a lot of limitations, and you need, you know, talking about monetization, you need funding, you know, maybe to go there. I need to explore it better, but I would say that one way is that, you know, the EU marketplace. Second option would be, actually, you mentioned like F-Droid for iOS. There's no such thing, but there are, I don't recall the names now, but essentially what you do is like, it's a companion app on your Mac or Windows, I think, where you basically can download any app, you self-sign, and you send it over Wi-Fi to your iPhone. So you're hanging that way. But this has a lot of limitations too, because I think they expire after 7 days. So you got to constantly having that thing plugged in, you know, and updating all your apps and signing them again and so on. So it's definitely not ideal. And the third option would be purely a PWA marketplace. So that would be available for all platforms, or meaning Android and iOS, but iOS users would only have access to the PWAs. And the other problem is, how does App Store itself, because we cannot publish App Store itself on the App Store. So that would also need to be either a PWA or something that you can self-sign and push to your iPhone. So it's quite complicated. I do want to address it somehow, at least have a basic version, but it's not a priority.
Yeah, it sounds really like a very difficult problem. The PWA store is an interesting idea. I'm a big fan of PWAs because they use the open platform of the internet and browsers. But it seems like, you know, PWAs are not people's first choice. And it's strange to me because, you know, obviously with real apps, you get access to a whole lot of, you know, platform specific APIs and stuff like that, which is great if you're doing something kind of weird. But for a Nostr app, in most cases, you don't really need a lot of those. You know, I recently released Coracle as a actual Android app with an APK. Via Zap Store and I guess implicitly via Obtainium. My experience in the Coracle app is actually inferior to my experience in the PWA, primarily because I can't long press on links. I think that's what it is. There's a few small things that are user input related that you just don't have the affordance in a real app. Even if it's powered by WebView, it seems like, versus a PWA. Why do you think people don't really use or like PWAs? Am I just wrong and too much of a web developer to get it?
Honestly, I share 100% with you. I have no idea why PWAs have something. There's something about it that just doesn't take off. And I don't know what it is. But I was going to mention that maybe the issue you're having with long presses and such has to do with the framework you're using to build the APK or something. Like, okay. That should not be a problem. You can long press on apps, so you should be able to do that on the web view.
Yeah. I have noticed that, I recently found out about Foundation 7, which is a web development framework that's intended for mobile. And so it supports stuff like long press and swipes and things like that normal frameworks don't. It's such a complex project to build something cross-platform. It sounds like you haven't quite figured out what sort of niche that Zap Store is going to live in. It sounds like there's kind of like two options as far as a general purpose app store or like a Nostr specific app store, it seems like it'd be very hard to do a general purpose one. You could do something like Obtainium, and of course you could have a better UI than Obtainium because their ad app dialogue is more complicated than it needs to be and kind of weird. And just sort of proxy GitHub basically, or other repositories. But having an app that's a, well, I guess it's kind of like Spring Browser. So how is ZapStore different from Spring Browser in terms of like, here's a place where you have a whole bunch of Nostr apps with reviews and Web of Trust analysis and all that kind of thing. And here's like an introduction to the Nostr ecosystem, an overview. You know, obviously Spring has its own sort of client features, but are you trying to play in the same space or are you going a different direction?
No, not at all. I'm not planning to do a Nostr client like Spring is. I think it had an integrated signer. So the idea was that you could open all these apps and you will already be signed in. That's something I'm super curious about, and I'd love to see how signers like Amber can help here. But I'm definitely building a general purpose client or store. I want to have as many apps as possible from anything.
Cool.
Yeah. And if Nostr is... Okay, so for example, right now when you open it, you see recommendations for Nostr apps, like a Nostr category. But, you know, eventually, I don't know if that will be the case for everyone. Like, you might not even know what Nostr is. And that's a bit my goal. That's how I want to, just to get outside of the Nostr circle. So the way I see it is like, this is like, you know, hardcore circle of Nostr, of like cypherpunks, let's say. Then you have like Nostr, which are a bit more, you know, whatever. And then there's an outer concentric circle where the way I see it in terms of like is a bit more distant from the cypherpunk ethos, but there's many more people, which is like the open source movement in general. And then you could see like the rest is just anyone, normies. I'm trying to cater to like that second circle of the open source devs. Mm-hmm. That
totally makes sense. Being able to monetize your open source stuff. Is Web of Trust like a core feature? Because that seems like, you know, it just reminds me of Mutiny basically, where they're doing Bitcoin payments and then they hook into Nostr's Web of Trust in order to power their search and like contextless stuff. Obviously you've kind of put that front and center when installing to say like, here's people that you follow who recommend this, or here's, you know, people from our bootstrap list that recommend this app or that have used this app or whatever. Is that it, like, you know, that would put you firmly in the other stuff category. And I guess you are anyway, but, you know, is Web of Trust core to what you're doing, or is that just kind of an extra thing on top?
It's impossible to do it without Web of Trust, especially since I mentioned I want to have as many apps as possible. So there are ways that if I was to think about how to approach it without a Web of Trust component, because remember, the idea is that there are it's permissionless, right? There's no intermediaries eventually, even though you need to use relays. But right now the project is open source, so you could fork it and change the relay and just run your own relay. Also, the custom relay I built, you can fork it and just do your thing. But I want the same ZapStore app to be able to, you know, to get it to anyone. So you are able to remove the default relay and use anything you want. But I would like to keep a good experience in that case. You know, you could be plugging in a relay that has just like random scammers signing apps. And how are you going to tell? Like, this is the Wild West. Like, we assume this is an adversarial environment. We assume that there will be scammers, that we're starting by that assumption. So how do you do that? Well, the first as you can see right now is prompting for, and why is it for the first installation, not for the updates? Because in the specific case of Android, the operating system takes care of updates. Like, once you install something, like, it'll check the hashes of the certificates, you know, moving forward, and doesn't let you downgrade easily. But for first installs, it's like, Well, it's this thing, I think SSH uses the same approach. It's called TOFU, Trust in First Use.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. So the other approach would be curation. So you participate in a relay that, you know, could be paid, for example. I mean, you're part of a community. And you know that things are vetted within that relay. So maybe you don't want to run that Web of Trust thing because you know that you only are querying this curated, this approved relay that not anyone can post to, and then you're safe. You know, that's the other option. A mix of both will be ideal. I think definitely not having to think about a Web of Trust is an improvement in terms of UX. So, and just talking in general, talking about monetization and circling back to the grants thing, I personally, even though I'm good with grants, but I definitely have the ambition to want to like take off, you know, and just like stop. I'm not just chill under the grant, no, but I really want to stop needing it for sure, 100%. Yeah. So I'm, I don't, without stressing about it, I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best to not have to need it and to be able to monetize the thing. That's why, you know, before the end of the year, I hope having that Zaps and trying to experiment with monetization further. And also, as I said before, empowering devs to not have to. I really wish I could like lower the load on the OpenSats. That would be the dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Also,
I mean, excluding libraries, right? Excluding like more common good sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and nothing feels better than making your own money, being sustainable. Like, it's true. Like a little part of me dies every time I get an OpenSats grant payout. At my previous company, you know, I started and we were in a bunch of debt. In the middle of a project rewrite, we were running out of money. One of the investors just kept putting more money into the business, like, okay, come on, go ahead and get it running so we can start making this back. And the day we hit profitability, I was so much happier because I knew I'm finally paying back the investors. I'm no longer like a drag on society. I'm no longer a parasite. I've proven my worth. I've proven my worth and now I can contribute to society. And like, I think that's the phase that Nostr is in. It's everyone who's a grantee is a drag on society, except that everyone who gave to OpenSats did it voluntarily with no expectation of return. So that makes it a little bit better. But still, it would be really nice if we could, for me, speaking personally, if I could just be making my own money.
Just like way more rewarding because the market is validating that what you put out is not whatever. It's just like there is a need and you have the proof that you're helping someone. Like money is that signal.
Yeah.
And here, this definitely is a distortion. But again, if we talk about like, you know, trade-offs and then, you know, the overall balance, yeah, it's a net benefit. Again, it's a net benefit, but I wish I could see, I hope it's me, but maybe it's other people, have more stories on Nostr of people making money. And by the way, this depends on how each developer thinks about things, but I have absolutely no problem in just getting on ramps for, you know, as I said, normies maybe not, but like the larger open source community, if they don't need to know about Bitcoin upfront in your face, you know, or Nostr in your face, like that, no, that's not going to be the case. I want this to power. That's always and forever be available to, you know, you always be able to use it as a cypherpunk if you want to. But it should also cater to people who don't give a shit.
Yeah, it is a pretty interesting, you know, comparing Nostr.
It's a Trojan horse. It's like we're putting Nostr and Bitcoin inside this thing and just making appealing to other people for their reasons, not for ours.
Yeah.
That's how you serve the market.
It is. And I think Nostr does a much better job with that than other open source software. You know, with the exception of like Linux distros. But you look at a lot of open source software and it's so niche that it only attracts the people who actually already need that and have that problem and want to solve it. And so they're willing to undergo a lot of, you know, research of their own. So skipping marketing, skipping a lot of user experience stuff. And so open source software, and especially like decentralized software, often does not have a polished user experience. I think Nostr has blown away a lot of alternative projects in that sense. But then, you look at like Linux distros, Red Hat's business model is support, but the operating system itself is open source and anyone can download it for free. Yeah. And they have a pretty good user experience for a very large scope project. It would be cool if we could replicate that kind of success where, we can make money off of the project, but still have a very high level of sophistication.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. If you're talking about Fedora, like that's at least because it's the UI, right? It's pretty polished. It's pretty good. Yeah. I'm happy that worked out. And I agree with you. I hope we can do the same on Nostr. One example that I have that is terrible is alternatives to Lightroom, like the photo editing software, like the color correction and so on. So the open source alternatives are so bad, like the UX. It's one called Dart Table. Like you need a PhD to understand that thing, you know, so. So again, this is a great example I always keep in my mind, like the day where I reach macOS and Linux, you know, this will be the first thing I put there. I want for that project or for another one, like if devs could get like, you know, not only money, not only Zaps, but, you know, more fluent communication, because you can think for Zaps or have a ton of ideas, right, on how to bring devs and users closer and, you know, maybe have bounties or have like better feedback on planned features and all that kind of stuff. And then that feedback into like the Nostr Git stuff, Git workshop and so on. That's also amazing. So we are talking, you know, there's like collaboration points there. I think, that would be the dream, you know, like, that they realize things that are not okay and they pay more attention because maybe people are attaching a fat zap to it, right? And it's like, or all of a sudden it attracts maybe UX designers because now, you know, there's more interest in the project and there's more money to fund that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that is something that's interesting about Nostr development is we have a good number of UI UX designers, many of them subsidized by grants, but you know, that has made it possible to create UIs that look pretty good and function pretty well, to the extent that developers actually implement those designs. I know I'm guilty of not always implementing the things that have been presented to me. But like, yeah, I mean, other examples that come to mind of open source software is GIMP and Inkscape. Yeah. You know, both of those are they're not pretty, they're not nice to use. Figma is beautiful and it was sold for what, $1 billion or something this summer. So there's a little bit of a category difference, but if we can achieve what Linux has on Nostr, even though Linux's experience is not as good as Apple, like Linux is to the level where consumers use it if they care about their privacy and sovereignty. And if Nostr reaches that level, like I will consider that a success. I would like it to be better. That is my goal. That's my stated goal. But like that's still like pretty dang good. You mentioned Amber a few minutes ago, and I just wanted to go on a little Amber tangent. Are there things like that, like the signing stuff, that makes it difficult for for people to adopt Android apps and start to use Zap Store? Or have you seen a decent level of adoption, both in terms of users using Zap Store and in terms of application developers listing things on Zap Store? So like with Coracle as an example, I only listed it maybe a month ago, and I did it kind of on impulse because I realized, oh, I can just do an APK. I don't have to actually go through Google Play's whole app submission process. And then it opened up a whole can of worms because I didn't have Amber and I didn't have Nippo 7. And bunkers are a little sketchy. And so I had to get an Amber implementation up and running, but I don't know anything about Android development. So I opened up a bounty and Biz on Nostr, Che Bizarro on GitHub submitted. He created a library that works with Capacitor.js to implement an Android NIP 55 signer. And it's great. I'm really happy to see how the bounty worked. And for anyone out there who wants to put their web application on Android, Capacitor and Biz's plugin is a great way to do that. But anyway, what have you seen like impediments to adoption?
I'm not sure what to answer because since I do like zero tracking of anything,
that's the classic Nostr answer.
But it is I acknowledge it as a problem anyway. Like obviously, that is the app you want to download first. So it might again be a chicken and egg problem in that you need what's the first app you would download on a new phone or on a new platform? Like, would it be Zap Store? Because from there you can download the signer and then that opens up a bunch of possibilities to just install and just get connected right into other apps. Should it be maybe that you should have a community app first from where you downloaded Zap Store, but then how did you sign in to the community? So it's tough. I don't know where people will start. Some people want to verify because you need to start by downloading something from somewhere. Some people download the Zap Store APK from the website, Zap.store. Well, there you're trusting the domain. Maybe right. You want to double check, and some people use the App Verifier app to see if the hash of the certificate of that APK matches. App Verifier is a handy application, but then you can trust them. So now you're trusting two different points, but you cannot download it. You cannot download it from Zap Store because if Zap Store is compromised, then App Verifier will also be compromised to make the hash check. So it's a tricky problem. I'm not really sure, but for sure, the signer, be it Amber or be it something else, maybe there are other apps that act as signers because, they deem themselves essential, I'm thinking about a chat app, like a community, like some like the place where you discover other stuff. So whether that is App Store is another chat app, I'm not sure, but those might have a signer. And also with that, I'm not really familiar with it, but if like this eCash, that you can load eCash with your MPUB kind of thing, like then it might also act as a wallet. And then you're set, right? Once you have that, you're set. Even in the case where you want to, let's say, restore. That's another of my dreams. That with Zap Store, and a signer, you can just restore, for some people might want to shut down or just delete their whole profile or something and then set it up again quickly. Of course, we need a lot of collaboration, integration with apps themselves. But if you could just with a few clicks that have, that backed up to a relay, and then you go to a new device, or even when you're just upgrading your device, you just do a few, you know, one download, one verification, three clicks, and you got all your environment set up again.
Yeah, yeah. And they have tools like that for desktop, but yeah, it'd be great to have something like that that's outside of Google's ecosystem. Because yeah, every time I set up a new phone, it's an hour long process of flashing the operating system, downloading Obtainium so that I can download ZapStore, and getting Bitwarden on my phone so that I have all my passwords, and setting my wallpaper and all that stuff. And I really don't mind doing that, in contrast, because at least I have a fresh install and I'm not downloading all the game that I downloaded 8 years ago and then never uninstalled or whatever. But yeah, having something that's outside of Google's cloud would be awesome.
That's de-googling ourselves is a noble goal. Something related to that, like not only just a full-blown environment installation, but something I've been working on for the imminent release of ZapStore 014. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm finishing that. It's pretty good. One of the things I have there is, it is already present in the current version, but these curation sets. So I have curated like a bunch of Nostr apps, a bunch of privacy apps, and so on. But now we'll have like lists from other people. So I want to showcase that on the next version. And even though this is not a whole like operating system like installation, like with everything, is like, oh, I want to be able to, you know, install all. Let's say you create a set, so I want all Nostr apps recommended by John, and then you just tap there and they get installed.
Yeah, totally. And you can use Web of Trust to filter those as well. Like, yep. And yeah, it'd be really helpful when for like a starter pack to install like Amber, Citrine, and Amethyst or whatever your Android client might be, and have it all wired together. I don't know. I guess you couldn't wire it together automatically, but yeah, the packs thing. And I think we're moving into, I think we're going to start seeing more stuff like that. Like there's been some talk about relay packs where, you know, here's how to set up all your 10 different categories of relays, like where to store Blossom blobs, where to store read, write, inbox relays. And then there's even, you know, there's an issue on GitHub with like 15 different relay categories on it. So yeah, packs and then followers that are mapped to topics and stuff like that. So that sounds like be really useful. So that sounds like that's on its way out pretty soon.
Not what you just mentioned, but the ZapStore release is yes. I think back to what you were saying is the wiring of all that stuff is going to be complicated, you know, between relays and signers and, you know, apps and so on. But got to put the work and make it happen.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, in a few days, hopefully, you know, as devs, I just hate to promise because something came up, you know, that was not working, even though it was like 99% done. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. So I released an update yesterday and immediately found Showstopper bugs right afterwards, and had to release another update.
Exactly. So I don't want to speak too soon, but it's in terms of the feature side, it's pretty much done. So
we'll 2 weeks TM.
2 weeks TM, exactly.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, FranZap. It's a great conversation. I'm excited to learn more about ZapStore. I thought it was just an app store, but obviously you have much bigger plans for it. Hopefully that revenue model kind of crystallizes over time and works out. Is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Download ZapStore. Try it out and don't report bugs. No, please send some feedback, please. Thanks everybody.
We don't track anyone, so.
I'm really humbled by all the words I receive, the support. There's like many people that really like it, and it's that in itself, besides money, is super rewarding. So So thank you all, and thanks for the patience as well. I'm doing my best here to put out. It's not only the app. It's the relay. It's the CLI. It's the Web of Trust component. It's the library that I wrote from scratch. So yeah, a bit tiring, but again, rewarding. So now just leave it with that. And again, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And we will see everyone on Noster.
Oh, yeah. Bye-bye.